From the gorgeous confines of Melbourne, Australia, across the USA and 61 countries spanning the globe, Expat Progressive Radio presents The Bill Show with Bill and Randall. Now fasten your seatbelts, kids, because here are the loudest fat lefties on the net, Bill and Randy.
Hello and welcome to The Bill Show, and I'm actually talking to you via an electronic snafu. An electronic snafu. Just finished the recording thing with Randall and went into the studio to do the final edit, realized there was an entire bit in the beginning of the show that wasn't there. So I'm going to have to record over it all by myself. Yes, it's professional radio journalism, ladies and gentlemen. It's what you've come to expect over the 119 shows we've done over the past 4 years. I'd like to welcome you on behalf of Randall, who will be joining us in just a moment through the miracle of wonderful technology, to the Bill Show 120. We've had a couple of weeks. Last week we had a best of kind of thing. Randall liked it. Randall liked the best of a lot, and a lot of people also commented on the fact that we had my dear friend Bill Davis, who started the show with me about 3 years ago, on there doing it. So we've come to the conclusion that might be something we do on a regular basis here. Looking back at some of the segments, because more often than not, we kind of prove that, I hate to be egocentric, but we're right. Because what we were talking about, of course, was Edward Snowden in the last show, and how people all over the blogosphere and throughout the media attacked this poor bastard. And then, of course, the appeals court of the United States said, yes, indeed, the NSA metadata gathering was in fact illegal. So we kind of asked, where's the apology, Mr. Snowden? Anyway, today we're going to be talking about, is the fantastic arrival of Bernie Sanders on the Democratic side of politics. Whether you like it or not, you're going to have to face certain issues, and Hillary is going to have to face certain questions, and we're going to talk about a lot of those questions and a lot of the effect that Bernie Sanders will be having on the presidential race. A lot of people sit there and think that Bernie won't, that he's going to be a blip. But I'm one of those people who kind of believe that you best not underestimate him. The possibility does exist that he could do very, very interesting stuff. We're also going to be talking a little bit about little mistakes that Jeb Bush have made during the week. We're also going to be talking about Chris Christie is popping up in our show coming up, as well as a special comment that we made earlier this week about Bernie Sanders getting into the race. We have a Randy's rant that I personally thought was actually quite right, and of course, as always, we're going to have the little comedy bits mixed in amongst all this, and of course we have a real special little thing is that in our tinfoil hats we have probably one of the most offensive clips I have seen, and I've seen a lot of offensive clips when listening to this show and making this show. But anyway, we are going to have all that happen in just a moment. We're going to get back to Randy's going to appear next to me as if by magic, ladies and gentlemen. But I'm going to first have a little break, and then we're going to go into a clip about Bernie Sanders. This was an ad that was actually made by someone who it was not a professional ad. It was a YouTube ad that Randy brought in. So we're going to take a short break and then get back to that ad, and we'll talk about it with Randy in just one moment.
When you get down to basics and you talk about morality, it seems to me that the least that we can do as a nation which has more income and wealth inequality than any other major country on earth, a nation in which the wealthiest people are becoming phenomenally richer while we have over 40 million people living in poverty, the very least that we could say is that nobody in America goes hungry. That, I would hope, would be the least that we could say is in a civilized democratic society.
Sanders tells ABC News he is in.
And Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont running for president.
Earlier today, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders officially announced that he will run as a Democrat for the president of the United States.
We now have a political situation where billionaires are literally able to buy elections and candidates. Let's not kid ourselves.
They want to end Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, more tax breaks for the rich and large corporations. Nobody in America wants that except the billionaire class. And yet they are now able to put hundreds of millions of dollars into the political process.
A great nation will not survive, in my view, when so few have so much and so many have so little.
Has a set of consistent principles that he has run on his entire political life.
I think Americans love authenticity, and they think there's not a lot of it in politics today. And Bernie Sanders, like him or not, is authentic.
Let's say this about Bernie Sanders. He is the rarest of commodities in Washington, D.C. He is truly an honest man.
I've never run a negative ad in my life. I've been in many campaigns, and you ask the people of Vermont, they will tell you Bernie Sanders has never run a negative ad. I hate and detest these 30-second ugly negative ads. Obviously, we have to be strong in protecting our people from terrorism, but I don't think we have to undermine the Constitution and deny our people basic constitutional rights.
I think what we have got to appreciate is when you have six financial institutions that have assets equivalent to about 60% of the GDP of America, you know what? Let's be honest. You can't regulate them.
You'd break up the banks.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They are too, if they're too big to fail, they are too big to exist.
Middle class is collapsing, poverty is up, and the rich are doing phenomenally well. What do you do? What you do is say that in America, we're going to rebuild our crumbling infrastructure. And by doing that, we're going to create millions of jobs.
We've got to raise the minimum wage to a living wage, and over a period of years, to at least $15 an hour.
We as a nation are the only country in the industrialized world not to guarantee health care. 45,000 people die each year because they don't get to a doctor on time, which is why, by the way, I am a strong advocate of a Medicare for All single-payer program.
Quality education in America, from child care to higher education, must be affordable for all.
Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders surprised everybody by raising more than $1.5 million in the first 24 hours after he announced. You have 100,000 people who have pledged to volunteer on the campaign already?
No, actually, we have 175,000. All over this country, you have a lot of bright, decent, good people. They're saying, you know what? Situation is hopeless. You can't beat the Koch brothers. You can't beat the billionaires. You can't win. I'm giving up. That is exactly what they want us to believe. And I beg of you, do not enter that world of despair. We can win this fight if we stand together.
Well, let me just say this about my political career. I think few would argue that it is the most unusual political career in the United States Senate. Nobody thought that I would be elected mayor of Burlington, Vermont. Very few people thought that I would beat an incumbent Republican to become United States Congressman from Vermont by 16 points. And people weren't so sure I could beat the richest person in Vermont to become a United States Senator. So I would say, don't underestimate me.
When millions of people stand up and fight, they win.
Yes, that's Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, who has now declared to be a nominee for the Democratic Party for President of the United States.
Wow. And we're still, what, 250 days out from Iowa?
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's got time to get let people get to know him. Boiney. Yeah. Mm. Boiney.
Boiney.
Boiney. Boiney. Is he, by the way, is he Jewish?
I don't know. I really don't know. But he looks like a Jewish guy walking out of a delicatessen.
The White House kitchen could whip up a good knish.
A knish. Hey, listen, they're all the king. But you just pointed out to me that Bloomberg Politics.
They did a profile on his wife 4 or 5 days ago. His wife is Jane. They've been together for 30-odd years.
Yeah.
And married since 1988.
Yeah.
So she's, an academic. She was president of a college in Vermont and a great asset to him. But they've already started throwing shit at her.
And go after the wives.
Yeah, go after the wives.
Yeah, that's real now, classy, mate.
So
real
apparently
classy.
When she was running this college, they're saying she took out some dodgy loans. Who's saying she took out the dodgy loans? Well, people like the D.C. dirty laundry rag, people like that.
Mm.
And look at this. I just went to Dr. Google and I said, could you tell me about Bernie Sanders' wife, Jane O'Meara Sanders? Bernie Sanders' wife. And look at this. You know, socialist Bernie Sanders' wife. Did socialist Bernie Sanders' wife commit loan fraud? You know, all of this is about socialist Bernie Sanders, the wife of socialist Senator Bernie Sanders.
It's like being labeled a child molester. Yeah. Child molester, Bernie Sanders.
But the thing is why is socialism a bad thing? FDR is as much a socialist Democrat as Bernie Sanders.
But I've said it before. If you live in America, you already live in a quasi-socialist state.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, who gives you Medicare? Not the Medicare fairy. Mm. It's the government, right?
Yeah,
who
there finances are about 35 things.
The government, you know.
There are about 35 things in America that are would be considered socialist principles.
Absolutely. And some of the ones that work best, like Social Security. But listen, Randy.
I'm listening.
George Stephanopoulos, or Snuffleupagus, as we call him here.
Snuffleupagus from the Sesame Street.
Yes, George Snuffleupagus, former press aide to the Clinton administration, who donated some money to the Clinton Foundation, without telling anybody about it, by the way, was talking to Bernie Sanders. Now, watch this response
You can't watch anything. This is radio.
On radio.
Imagine in your mind's eye.
George Snuffleupagus and the way he treads around this socialist question, and especially when Bernie says that, heaven forbid, America should aspire to be Scandinavia.
Well, I mean, like Scandinavia, and then they make Volvos and things.
Yeah, but
what does Greece do? Greece just defaults.
Yeah, but that's not his fault.
No, but neither
is Stephanopoulos' fault.
But the point is that why is he saying that that's such a bad thing?
I don't know. Here it is, Snuffleupagus talking to Bernie Sanders, who's talking logic, which might be a problem for him. Here it is.
And Senator Bernie Sanders joins us now. Welcome to This Week. Why are you the best choice for President of the United States?
Because for the last 30 years, I've been standing up for the working families of this country, and I think I'm the only candidate who is prepared to take on the billionaire class, which now controls our economy and increasingly controls the political life of this country. We need a political revolution in this country involving millions of people who are prepared to stand up and say enough is enough, and I want to help lead that effort.
So does that mean that Hillary Clinton's part of the billionaire class?
It means that Hillary Clinton has been part of the political establishment for many, many years. I have known Hillary for some 25 years. I respect her and I like her. But I think what the American people are saying, George, is that at a time when 99% of all new income is going to the top 1%, and when the top 0.1% owns almost as much wealth as the bottom 90%, maybe it's time for real political shakeup in this country and go beyond establishment politics.
You're asking for a lot of shakeup. Is it really possible for someone who calls himself a socialist to be elected president of the United States?
Well, so long as we know what democratic socialism is. And if we know that in countries in Scandinavia, like Denmark, Norway, Sweden, they are very democratic countries. Obviously, the voter turnout is a lot higher than it is in the United States. In those countries, health care is a right of all people. In those countries, college education, graduate school is free. In those countries, retirement benefits, child care are stronger than in the United States of America. And in those countries, by and large, government works for ordinary people in the middle class rather than, as is the case right now in our country, for the billionaire
class. I can hear the Republican attack ad right now. He wants America to look more like Scandinavia.
That's right. That's right. And what's wrong with that? What's wrong when you have more income and wealth equality? what's wrong when they have a stronger middle class in many ways than we do, a higher minimum wage than we do, and they're stronger on the environment than we do. Look, the fact of the matter is we do a lot in our country, which is good, but we can learn from other countries. We have, George, the highest rate of childhood poverty of any major country on earth at the same time as we're seeing a proliferation of millionaires and billionaires. Frankly, I don't think that's sustainable. I don't think that's what America is about.
Yes, but you're a socialist.
No, a social democrat.
No, you're a socialist. Mm. That means you're running around and you're trying to invade countries and you wear red and you go to marchy parades and you hate Jesus.
No. Honestly, I have to admit, he's correct. When you talk about the four or five countries that would be considered Scandinavia if you count Denmark, Finland, Norway, and Sweden, they actually do have incredibly good social things. Even though it snows and it's goddamn cold, freeze your tits off. Helsinki is one of the 10 most livable cities in the world.
Oh, Finland, Denmark, Sweden, they're always in the top 10.
Yeah.
And by the way...
No, only Finland. Four of the most livable cities in the world, of course, are in Australia.
That's right.
We have very social, democratic... Everybody envies Australia and they say, oh, you're a great capitalist country. No, we're incredibly social, democratic.
We're a social, democratic country that has...
National health.
National health.
You know, and... infrastructure. I mean, a lot of the stuff here is whatever the people envy.
People make money here. I mean, we make money. I mean, it's a capitalist country.
Well, here's a statistic I saw last week.
What?
We have the largest middle class in the world.
Do
even
we?
Bigger by per capita. Even more than India. America is 32nd.
Mm. Yes. There you go. So, I mean, I'm getting kind of sick of people running around saying it's just terrible that he's a socialist. Oh, my God, what'll happen?
You know what I'm waiting for?
Save the children.
You know what I'm waiting for?
What?
Bernie Sanders is coming to get your guns. Because then I know he's being effective.
But
he's already the
he's
Hillary.
A lot like Wilfred Brimley, so he's really slow.
Yeah, he looks more like Albert Einstein. But Albert Einstein. But the thing is that as soon as the Hillary coming for your guns ad started, I thought, man, that lady's biting.
This is what Bernie reminds me of. Hey, Marty!
What do you want to do tonight, Marty?
Hey, Marty!
Yeah. You're going to go out tonight, Marty?
Oh, Doc Brown!
Oh, Doc Brown.
It's a science experiment, Marty! Okay, listen. I'm going to go to a break right now. This is a special comment. I felt really strong about this.
Well, no, you've actually convinced me. I thought Bernie Sanders was going to be a distraction.
Are you going to vote for him?
Oh, I can't. I told you last week I can't vote.
Oh, that's bullshit. Your father tells you you can't vote.
No, my father's wish was because I don't live in America, I shouldn't vote in American elections. But the reason I became an Australian citizen in 95 was because I could vote and because I live here and pay taxes here.
Yeah.
That's why but anyway, that's his wish. I don't. People do what their father wants them to do even when they're 62 like me.
No, most people
don't. No, I really am. Oh.
Especially if they watch Fox News.
It is secret. It is secret. If I was to vote, he wouldn't know.
Don't tell him.
I'm not that kind of person.
Okay, well, listen, we're going to sort that personal problem out over the break.
I hope so.
Okay, listen, this is a special comment I did before, and then we are going to have a little comedy with John Oliver, and then I think we'll probably be going to a thing called Randy's Rant.
Oh, I'm really pissed off now.
Are you ready?
I'm ranting.
Okay, kids, we'll be back in just one moment.
Now it's time for a Bill Show special comment. Yes, Bernie Sanders. The world may come to an end because a demon socialist is now running for president. You know, it's enough to make Greg Gutfeld's head explode, if only. It's enough to make Bill O'Reilly actually look into a dictionary and figure out what a socialist is. Bernie Sanders, the good uncle version of the cranky old psycho that is John McCain, is hurling his body in front of the automatronic CGI Michael Bay Transformer monster that is the Hillary Clinton. Clinton campaign. Hillary, of course, is trying to get what has been promised ever since she signed her name to a contract in blood 100 years ago to a rather shady-looking fellow that may or may not have been Mephistopheles or an account manager at Goldman Sachs. Now, don't get me wrong. I dated Hillary many years ago. She was young, hip, fought for single-payer health care, and in her spare time, when she wasn't being accused by the GOP for doing everything but killing Vince Foster and plotting the Kennedy assassination when she was 9. I thought Hillary was smart, sassy, and a true warrior for the middle class. And now that she's running for president against that stone commie socialist, Bernie Sanders, she's tried to resurrect her credibility and credentials with the common folk by getting all misty about the decline of the middle class and the big salaries of all those nasty boys and girls on Wall Street. Here's a bit where she did a little cozying up to the microphone just the other day, speaking to the common clave. You know, us.
I think it's fair to say that as you look across the country, the deck is still stacked in favor of those already at the top. And there's something wrong with that. There's something wrong when CEOs make 300 times more than the typical worker. There's something wrong when American workers keep getting more productive as they have, and as I just saw a few minutes ago, is very possible because of education and skills training, but that productivity is not matched in their paychecks. And there's something wrong when hedge fund managers pay lower tax rates than nurses or the truckers that I saw on I-80 as I was driving here over the last 2 days.
Yes, she actually had experiences with actual truck drivers. I can see her now speeding down I-80 next to a large man looking vaguely like John Goodman, her tattooed leg propped up on the dashboard, swinging her schlitz, chowing down on Funyuns, and talking about the preservation of Social Security. But I ask you, folks, did that really happen? In recent weeks, old Hillary's been getting all populist on us. In fact, in a speech the other day, she had the balls to say, and I quote, "I am Bernie Sanders." Really? Because you don't look a bit like Bernie. Not only do you not have the look of a 60-year-old retiree who walks into a Brooklyn deli screaming about socialism, but you lack the qualifications. You see, poor old Bernie has been talking about the vanishing middle class for the last 10 years. And he's been all alone in the cafeteria at the Senate office building. Here he is, introduced by an ever-cranky Keith Olbermann, God we miss him, in 2010, standing in the Senate, filibustering the extension of the Bush tax cut giveaway gravy train. By the way, he's alone.
Good evening from New York. This is Friday, December 10th, 697 days until the 2012 presidential election. And today we saw history on the floor of the Senate. It started at 10:25 in the morning and kept going until 6:59 p.m., 8.5 hours and change. Reportedly, the number of people watching it crashing the computer servers of the United States Senate. A filibuster, historic both because of the cause for which it was waged, and in our fifth story tonight because it was not technically a filibuster, but something new and unique. A Bernie Buster. Senator Bernie Sanders, independent of Vermont, self-professed socialist, the first senator to vow opposition to the president's tax cut deal with the Republican Party, speaking to an empty chamber but an enthralled nation. This was the leading trend on Twitter in this country and the second leading one worldwide, turning his opposition to this bill into an epic essential lesson about the history of the nation's middle class, its families and children, and about the generational transformation we have witnessed under presidents, Republican and Democratic, in which the rich have not just grown richer, but have redefined the concept of rich. While the future of America's children has been mortgaged and collateralized and securitized and outsourced and leveraged and downsized into nothing. Democratic Senator Sherrod Brown, along with nominal Democrat Mary Landrieu, helping out by spelling Sanders for brief breaks. Mr. Sanders began with a simple declaration.
Mr. President, as I think everyone knows, the President of the United States, President Obama, and the Republican leadership have reached an agreement on a very significant tax bill. In my view, the agreement that they reached is a bad deal for the American people. I think we can do better. And I am here today to take a strong stand against this bill. And I intend to tell my colleagues and the nation exactly why I am in opposition to this bill. You can call what I'm doing today whatever you want. You can call it a filibuster. You can call it a very long speech. I'm not here to set any great records or to make a spectacle. I am simply here today to take as long as I can to explain to the American people the fact that we have got to do a lot better than this agreement provides.
Yes, Bernie has been a slightly overweight and crusty Wilford Brimley acting like Jimmy Stewart for most of his political life. He may not be glamorous and he looks kind of scrubby, especially when he's photographed with Willie Nelson, but Bernie has walked the walk. He's been the lonely, and I mean really fucking lonely, conscience of the Senate for years. And if you want to know who supports Bernie, all you have to do is look at the donations from his most recent senatorial campaign. According to SourceWatch, Bernie's contributors look like the cast of Norma Rae. 9 out of 10 of the contributors are labor unions. Sheet Metal Workers Union, Communication Workers Union, American Postal Workers Union, National Nurses United, and the American Federation of Municipal employees. These aren't high-priced sugar daddies doling out big bucks for corporate kickbacks. These are guys and gals who go bowling and look like Drew Carey. And that includes the nurses. For contrast, we thought we'd take a kind of humorous look at the common proletarian workers that supported Hillary in 2008. The number one contributor was a fine group called Citicorp. Yes, Citicorp. The friendly bank that agreed to pay $7 billion to settle with the Justice Department over accusations of misdeeds in the lead-up to the financial crisis, including what Attorney General Eric Holder called the largest penalty to date of its kind. This settlement included $4 billion in civil penalties, $2.5 billion in aid to customers, and $500 million in restitution to the FDIC in 5 states that bought their crappy mortgage bond securities that they knew were shit. The bank's misconduct was egregious, and under the terms of this settlement, the bank has admitted to its misdeeds in great detail, Holder said. What this means is that the number one donator to Hillary's 2008 campaign are a felonist bunch of morally depraved con men who plotted one of the great scams on the middle class in recent American history. Not to overstate it. Number two, Goldman Sachs. Yes, they're the number two funder of Hillary's campaign. A lovable bunch of scumbag ragamuffins that committed securities fraud in April of 2008 when it sold mortgage-related securities to investors without telling them that the investment vehicle, a thing called Abacus, had been designed in consultation with hedge fund manager John Paulson, no relation to Hank Paulson, who chose securities he expected to decline in value and it shortened the portfolio. The Goldman product did indeed fall in value, causing institutional customers, yes, that's you and me, mom-and-pop adventures with investors with their retirement funds to lose more than $1 billion, while Paulson and Goldman Sachs made a whole bunch of money. Aren't they great? Number three funder of Hillary's campaign, yes, the good folks at J.P. Morgan Chase. They were one of Hillary's top sugar daddies in 2008 and spent much of their spare time bending over the middle class and rogering them from behind without any lubricant. In a single deal dwarfing any other in American history, the U.S. Justice Department announced a $13 billion civil settlement last year with the good folks at J.P. Morgan Chase. Restitution stemming from the bank's questionable mortgage bundling practices that helped plunge the country into, that great recession shithole that we had to climb out of. And rounding off the top four of Hillary Clinton's cheering section in 2008, the lovely folks at Morgan Stanley. You know, in his book, Infectious Greed and How Deceit and Risk Corrupted the Financial Markets, a former Morgan Stanley trader, Frank
Portnoy mentions an investigation by the New York Attorney General into executive pay on Wall Street revealed that in 2008, when Morgan Stanley received $10 billion of your money, that's right, your money in TARP funding, the firm had a net income of only $1.7 billion. But somehow they managed to pay themselves bonuses of $4.475 billion. Where did that money come from? Morgan Stanley's internal culture encouraged an extremely aggressive risk-taking in exchange for high rewards. Frank Portnoy has described Morgan Stanley as having a military approach and a killer attitude. He likened the film to a savage cult where salespeople boasted about ripping the faces off their clients. Isn't that nice, kids? These are the folks that financed Hillary's campaign. Yes, it's with friends like that that you can understand why Hillary Clinton will probably not be confused with Che Guevara real soon. Bernie's contributors are the 99%. Hillary's are the who's who of rich scumbags who cut you off in traffic in their BMW, take pictures of their food at fancy restaurants, snort cocaine off of hookers' navels, and trot off to the office to steal your kid's college fund and invest in selling asbestos-flavored baby food. All right, maybe I'm overstating things, but they're definitely not truck drivers on I-80. So despite the fact that some Democrats are going to accuse me of wasting my vote, I'm going to saddle up with ugly old Bernie. To me, it seems the one that's wasting their vote is the one who expects a candidate who gets most of her money from the 1% to do anything but act in their interests. I mean, it's possible that Hillary might get back to her roots, but it's more likely that she will run the Obama game plan. Talk all that nice, hopey, changey stuff in the start and end up playing golf with Mitch McConnell and fast-track trades deals that actively screw workers to the wall. This has been a special comment, and now this.
Arise, you workers, from your slumber. Arise, ye prisoners of want. For reason and revolt now thunders, and at last ends the age of cant. Away with all your superstition, servile masses, arise, arise. We'll change henceforth the old tradition, we'll spurn the dust to win the prize. Ah, so comrades, come rally, and the last vital let us face. The International
United... Finally tonight, Bud Light. If Budweiser is the king of beers, then Bud Light is the feudal peasant covered in donkey shit of beers. And this week, Bud Light found itself in trouble.
Hard to understand how this made it past the pitch meeting. A slogan on bottles of Bud Light called it, quote, the perfect beer for removing no from your vocabulary for the night.
Well, clearly, I did not just drink a Bud Light because no Bud Light, no, no. It is pretty obvious why this slogan was problematic.
Some said the message recalls alcohol's connection to sexual assault.
Critics saying it invites attacks on women.
I say it has a certain rapey feel to it.
Okay, that's true, but it would be great if you used a slightly more serious word than rapey because it's somewhat diminishing. It's like saying Floyd Mayweather is a smidge assaulty. It's technically correct, but it'd be more appropriate to say he's a woman battering human landfill. That would be more on the money. He boxes as well, apparently. The amazing thing was, this was not just one person's mistake.
The label went through at least five layers of approval before it landed on the bottle.
Allow me to venture a wild guess as to what those five layers of approval at Budweiser's corporate headquarters were. Layer one, yeah, boy! Layer two, sick idea, brah! Layer three, that's what I'm talking about, aight! Layer four, no, that's what I'm talking about, son! And of course, step five, blah! Approved! Blah! It's the Bud Light way. The slogan has since been withdrawn, but Bud Light's broader Up For Whatever campaign remains. And you've probably seen the hidden camera-based commercials.
What's up, guys? What's your name?
Riley.
So if I gave
give you a Bud Light? Are you up for whatever happens next?
Yeah.
Oh, good. That's great news. Fantastic. I've got two more questions for you then. What's your blood type and how would you like to meet Keith Richards? In these ads, whenever someone accepts they're taken on a spontaneous adventure, which might involve playing table tennis with Arnold Schwarzenegger or a real-life game of Pac-Man, which sure looks like fun, especially if you're a 10-year-old in 1985. But if Bud Light really wants to fix the mistakes in its marketing, then in the interests of accuracy, they need to fix those ads too.
What's up, guys?
Hey.
If I gave you this Bud Light, are you up for whatever happens next?
Yeah.
Sure. Wait, do I have to drink the Bud Light?
Yeah.
Oh, then no.
What? Why?
Because Bud Light tastes like a beer that someone already threw up.
Yeah, it's like a liquid John Mayer song.
Okay, but the thing is, like, it's all about whatever happens next, so if you could...
Yeah, but it tastes like the flat soda that a homeless guy uses to rinse off birds.
Yeah, that's exactly what it tastes like. Yeah.
Okay, look, I'm not supposed to do this, but we have hidden cameras inside of this bar, and when you get outside, there's, like, going to be this huge thing for you if you could just drink this Bud Light.
You mean the beer that tastes like water strained from a gutter full of dog's teeth?
Bud Light tastes like the scared urine of a rabbit.
It's like Steven Seagal's pre-com.
Yeah, but we have like an epic night plan for you.
Okay, listen to me very, very carefully. This is important. If a nickel could urinate, it would taste like Bud Light.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Bud Light tastes like the ghost of a dead lemon.
Basically, if water could just go bad.
We have a stretch limo waiting for you guys outside with Peyton Manning in it, and he's going to take you to play a game of giant Jenga, okay? And then after that, you're going to go on one of those Virgin Galactic missions into space.
That sounds amazing. I'm just not going to do it.
All right, you know what? Just let me drink it.
What does that taste like? Describe it.
It tastes like if a raccoon ejaculated carbonated vinegar inside of an old log.
That is good. Yeah. Really nice.
Bud Light, the only beer that makes you up for literally anything else.
Oh, I'm sorry. Ejaculating raccoons, they just leave a bad taste in my mouth.
And that's the difference between the old show and this one. Look, ejaculating raccoons.
But at least they wash their hands and food.
Oh, no, stop.
But listen, I'm sorry. I won't drink Budweiser full strength.
No,
unless
I mean,
I was dying of thirst.
We moved from America to avoid avoid American beer.
It's a country with real beer. Australia is a country with real beer.
Yeah, but I grew up where, you know, in the
Northeast. In Boston with Samuel Adams.
In Boston, no, before Samuel Adams. Samuel Adams was a boutique beer.
Yeah.
I grew up drinking Old Milwaukee, or as we fondly called it, Old Swillwaukee. You would have to...
Isn't that the one they made on the Laverne and Shirley show?
Yeah, it's like Schlitz, you know?
Schlitz!
You know, Black Label, you know, those beers
Pabst,
that you...
Pabst!
To actually drink them, you have to make them so cold that your mouth is numb. You know, I mean,
and don't drink Foster's either, because that's not Australian.
Oh my God, Foster's
that sucks.
Shit. Anyway, listen, by the way,
that was a great little bit.
We played the Internationale. People are going to think we're commies.
No, we're not. That's the socialist anthem.
Yes.
It was originally written by the French.
That's right.
It's sort of like a socialist version of the Marseillaise, which is a revolutionary song. So it can't be all that bad.
But I could hear somebody in the background going,
fucking commies, man.
Anybody who plays a song like that ain't got no religion.
But we played
I'll
that,
get my gun.
Yeah, we played that guitar version because, of course, Bernie Sanders, when he was at college in New York.
He was a folk singer. That's right, baby. Talking. And now listen, you have something that's eating your skull.
I'm such a rant.
I have
play
to
play my music.
I will play your music. Here it is. It's time for Randy's Rant. Yes, it's Randy's Rant today.
Yeah, it is Randy's Rant. And I'm here.
Yes.
To talk about a subject which nobody else wants to talk about, I don't think.
Nobody else wants to talk about.
And
well,
that's about
we
the tax on religion.
Ah.
The tax on religion. You know, you think the First Amendment gets fucked up. The Second Amendment gets butt-fucked by Americans abusing it. Freedom of religion is... They don't just want it to be freedom of religion or freedom from religion. They want religion to be free.
I've come to know you over a period of time.
Yeah.
And religion pisses you off.
Well, it's not the religion. Religion pisses me off.
Are you an agnostic, atheist?
An agnostic. I suppose an agnostic. But if people have a belief and that helps them, that's fine.
Yes, God bless.
Rastafarians, they believe in Mull. Mm. Whatever. I'm just saying, I think organized religion is a con.
Yeah, I think that you could make a case for that. And one of the things that you wanted to talk about today, which you were is why is religion not taxed?
Well, it goes back to the freedom of religion. It goes back several hundred years that they wanted the freedom of religion to mean religion is free. We do good works. So, therefore, our altruistic income should be tax deductible. And if you make a donation to your church, you should be able to deduct that from your tax. But what pisses me off...
What?
I'm jaundiced with piss. I am angry
because... Is a raccoon involved?
No, raccoon ejaculate.
Okay, yeah.
These people...
Yes.
...are total political... reactionaries.
Yes.
And they're not paying for the privilege. That pisses me off. Do you know, William?
Yes.
How much money is deducted every year by all organized religions in the United States?
I don't know.
$71 billion as of last year. Christ. Apparently, exponentially, it would be up to $82.5 billion. Now, that would actually feed the world's poor. Now, here's the irony. Everybody out there, turn off your irony alert buttons or your irony alerts, because these people who are trying to make America a Christian nation and who are running five of the six candidates in the GOP are Bible botherers. These guys say the Pope should mind his own fucking business. Republicans want the Pope to stop inserting religion into politics. That's what Republicans are saying. Can you work that one out? So for my $71 billion in tax write-offs, I would like these people to be taxed, to pay for tax. Now, so that's what the yearly religious tax exemptions are, is about $70 to $80 billion U.S.
And I think that you do have a really valid point in so much as...
But why are they tax-free?
Well, that's the point. And the point I think that you're trying to make, I don't think that the church is sponsoring... presidential candidates directly, but they're all in on the kind of born-again gravy train.
Oh.
And people like Huckabee actually make their living as really tent performers. That's what they are.
But you can have a mega church in L.A., the Crystal Cathedral, worth millions of dollars, and it's all built, and it's with the guy with the bad nose job. What was his name?
I don't know who you're talking about.
The Crystal Cathedral is a huge mega drive-in church.
Yeah.
Billion, and he writes it all off.
Oh, yeah. There's
private jets.
Absolutely.
All of it.
And you know, there's some really lovely religious people, by the way. I know a lot of people are very lovely people, and they don't have a lot of money. But what the problem is that if you live in a secular state, friends and neighbors, there's no official religion.
Yeah.
So forcing the rest of us to finance every person who wants to call himself a religion...
And it's very easy to do, as we will hear.
...cost $70 billion. And when you see some of the absolute opulence that is, you know, vaunted in people's faces from the religious, especially the religious right.
Yeah.
It's enough to make you really want to
throw
up.
Okay, here's some of the monies in to religion. Personal, corporate, and foundation donations, which are, of course, tax deductible. Fundraisers, merchandise.
So this is what's deductible.
This is what goes into religion.
Okay.
Volunteer labor, direct subsidies by the government, and related and unrelated business income, because a lot of religions have business. They pay no property tax. They pay no investment tax. They pay no sales tax. Related business income is actually given a tax subsidy. They also receive monies for putting volunteer labor to work. They are a parsonage, meaning the place where the priests live, which or the ministers, which could be million-dollar mansions, are also exempt.
And many times were, by the way.
And no income, no federal, state, or local income tax. And all donations made by people in the plate or whatever are tax-deductible as well. So all of that adds up to over $71 billion a year. And that makes me angry because these people, now, they are political activists and they're not paying for the privilege.
But, you know, what if I would say, if I'm on the church's side now and I'm sitting there saying, listen, Randall, the churches do an amazingly amount of good work that the government doesn't do. So why not give them a break on tax?
Fine, give them a break on tax, but they should still file a return just like everybody else, and get their tax back if they do good works.
You mean give them specific deductions for the works that they do?
Yeah.
Right.
What's wrong with that? Like we do.
Like we do, absolutely. Yeah. Okay. I would argue, actually, the same thing. I would say that there are a lot of public and private organizations that do incredible work that have to pay their taxes or at least file.
Yeah. So if you if you're threatened with violence, you'll get arrested. But if you threaten
You're reading memes now.
If you threaten people with eternal damnation, you can deduct it from your tax. Now, which president said this?
What? Okay.
The divorce between church and state ought to be absolute. It ought to be so absolute that no church property anywhere in any state or in any nation of the America should be exempt from equal taxation. For if you exempt the property of any church organization, to that extent you impose a tax upon the whole community.
Was that Jefferson?
No. What? Thomas Jefferson? No, it was James A. Garfield who was assassinated.
Oh, James Garfield.
Okay. Yeah. Here, okay. One president said this: we establish no religion in this country. We command no worship. We mandate no belief, nor will we ever.
Yeah.
Church and state are and must remain separate.
I know that the Adams and Jefferson were very...
No, St. Ronnie.
Ronnie Reagan.
Yeah. How's that? Listen to this.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Well.
And democracy demands that the religiously motivated translate their concerns into universal rather than religion-specific values.
Mm-hmm.
It requires that their proposals be subject to argument and amendable to reason. Now, I may be opposed to abortions for religious reasons,
yes,
to take one example. But if I seek to pass a law banning the practice, I cannot simply point to the teachings of my church or evoke God's will. I have to explain why abortion violates some principle that is accessible to people of all faiths, including those of no faith at all. Who said that?
I have no idea.
B.O.
Huh?
B.O.
Barack Obama.
Yeah. So, there are a lot of people out there who, in principle, are against this whole thing about taxing religion or letting religion off tax-free.
Off on the tax.
Yeah.
All right. Well, listen, I wanted to go quickly before we went to another break and then have a tinfoil hat.
Well, I wanted to have a little clip. I'd like to play a clip.
Oh, please do.
Okay?
Okay.
Now, this lady is a atheist. Now, the atheists have been quite angry.
Yes.
They're organized, but they're an organized anti-religion, as it were. They don't believe organized religion should have tax-exempt status. Do you know what the IRS did?
What?
Offered the same tax-free status to any
atheists.
And this is her response.
Should atheist groups receive the same tax breaks that religious organizations get? The federal government thinks so. The U.S. government wants to give tax breaks to leading atheist groups, saying that atheist leaders can be considered ministers. Atheists, however, say we are not a church and have no interest in being considered as such. A court battle over the tax break that allows ministers of the gospel to claim part of their salary as tax-free housing is being contested by Freedom From Religion, a Madison, Wisconsin-based atheist organization that believes the exemption gives religious groups an unfair advantage and is unconstitutional. But government lawyers say that atheist leaders can be ministers too, since atheism can function as religion. Here to discuss the ongoing battle is Jamila Bey, host of the Sex, Politics, and Religion Hour, and a board member of the American Atheists. Thank you for being here, Jamila.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks. Now, I want to start off by asking you, do other atheist organizations around the country agree with the organization Freedom Against Religion, what their stance?
If we look at what the law actually says, ministers of the gospel are entitled to take tax breaks for their housing. But here's the thing. Any nonprofit organization in the U.S. should either be able to be treated as people who are doing groups that are doing good work, or they should get the same protections that religious organizations do. The problem is that atheist groups are not churches. None of the groups are using a supernatural claim to a higher power. You know, rabbis aren't ministers of the gospel. Imams aren't ministers of the gospel. But if we're all doing organizational work that requires organization, exemptions for housing, either everybody gets it or nobody does. Don't try and fudge the issue by saying you're a church and you act as a religion, you act as a minister. Absolutely not. Even the government doesn't buy that. They're bemused by the whole thing.
Now, what, in your opinion, makes this tax exemption specifically unconstitutional?
Congress shall make no law. Okay, here's the deal. Let's pretend that you, Aaron, are Minister Aaron, and I am non-minister Jamila. Now, if your job says you can have part of your salary in housing, that's money that all taxpayers are giving to you. You can deduct it off of your taxes, and you don't have to report it. Whereas if I say, okay, well, I work with a school group that teaches science, I don't get the taxpayers to help pay my mortgage. That's unjust. Only because you claim to have some supernatural thing going on do you get a real and easy to see benefit that I can't even apply for simply because I don't claim to have God or gods or whatever on my side.
And so that was Randy's rant. I really think...
Wait a minute, cut the music. Wait, here it is. It's very angry.
It is, yeah, sorry. I really wanted to say that was Randy's rant.
Yes.
I believe, like this lady said, you either... Everybody's given the benefit or nobody's given the benefit. I'd rather nobody be given the benefit.
Yes.
And if you want a tax break, you have to apply for it, just like everybody else who files an income tax.
Damn it. Right. And I think he's got a point there. How much? $71
billion? It's up closer to $80
billion. $80 billion.
That would feed the world's poor.
Yes.
And I'd take a big, big, big chunk out of the deficit.
Well, listen, that's
in America, yes.
I wanted to bring up one thing that I saw. I saw an article that completely tickled me, and just in the last bit of the...
The hot dog subsidy.
Yeah, the hot dog subsidy. I'm going to play you some music, and here it is. This is an old one. Listen to this. Randy, it's yummy, yummy, yummy. I got love in my tummy. And the reason I'm playing that, Randy, is because one of the funnest things, besides the two other stories we're going to go to, which were Marco Rubio basing the foreign policy of his campaign on the tagline for the new Liam Neeson film. And the other thing we're going to talk about is Jeb Bush saying, oh, yeah, I would have gone into Iraq again. No worries, mate.
Yeah.
What a dickhead.
Listen to a story about a man named Jed.
Yep. He's. I don't know why people still think he's a front runner, Randy.
I don't think he is. He's just George III.
I mean, he has spent the last week crapping on himself. It has been absolutely incredible.
And in his Apple Watch, which he was obviously given for product placement, and he had to show it in at least one interview, his Apple Watch is going to replace Obamacare.
That's what he said. He said that in the future, we won't need health care. We'll have watches.
The watch will tell everybody that you're not well.
Now, the last one, though, that really got to me, and I had to play Yummy Yummy, which is still going here. I salute Chris Christie. Yes, Chris Christie. It takes real skill. This is from New Jersey. One of the papers in New Jersey came out with this. New Jersey Governor Chris Christie has been incredibly wasteful in a lot of his spending. He spent more than $80,000 of taxpayer money, wait for it, on snacks.
On snacks.
at NFL games between 2010 and 2011. According to the report from the New Jersey Watchdog, Christie used his government debit card 58 times, cramming huge amounts of high cholesterol food into his fat fucking face at MetLife Stadium, and his office did not provide any receipts, business reasons, or names of individuals entertained, but defended the expense. Ah, Chris was hungry. Christie's office has defended his use of the expense account, but were clearly embarrassed by the revelation that the governor was expensing quite a few beers while watching the Giants and Jets play because it reimbursed the cost associated with the games. Can you imagine
sitting... Are these even New Jersey teams?
Yes, they are.
That's all right then.
You're a nerd. I don't expect you to know that, but I just love the future president of the United States to be a guy sitting there going, excuse me, you got to use the crapper.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, you got to drain the lizard, mate.
Oh, yeah, you got to drop it there. I think I got this hot dog stuck in there, so I should have just taken him one bite.
I love when Chris Christie kind of owns up to that fat bastard kind of moniker that he's actually managed.
He's not fat, he's beefy.
He's thin compared to us.
He's beefy. No, actually, yes, he's not. He's a fucking pig.
If you ever wanted to see the result of a lap band not working,
no, you just go around it with ice cream and stuff.
As I said before, it's Christie one lap band nothing.
Is he on the band as well?
Yeah, they put him on the band.
Okay. You and I are banders.
Yeah, too. We also have found that drinking beer is a great way to get those high calories past a band.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, it is. So anyway, we're going to go to a break right now, and this is actually
not a break. Not break.
We're going to go to a quick break because we're running on 54. This is a Sarah Silverman's sketch that she came out with recently that I think expresses a lot of the frustrations that Randall expressed
that I was ranting about.
You're in Randy's rant today. Oh. So we're going to give you a little dose of that, and we're going to be back after this message.
Hey, you. It's me, Sarah Silverman. You know, lately I've noticed a lot of really sad, really long commercials on TV with like grossy, sick, emaciated people from all over the world. And it turns out they look that way because they don't have food. And I know what you're thinking. If you don't like it, Silverman, TiVo passed it. I did. You still see them. Especially because, like, I have a 48-inch plasma high-def TV, so every devastating image is in, like, brilliant, crisp, vivid, like they're in my apartment, you know. So how do I get these people out of my apartment, basically? And I think I figured it out. Like, all I have to do is end world hunger. And then I'm like, okay, how are you going to end world hunger? And then it hit me. Sell the Vatican, feed the world. Think about it. We need a hero. And who is more primed to be our hero than the Pope? He's literally a caped crusader. What is the Vatican worth? Like $500 billion? This is great. Sell the Vatican, take a big chunk of that money, build a gorgeous condominium for you and all of your friends to live in, all the amenities, swimming pool, tennis court, water slide. And with the money left over, feed the whole fucking world. You preach to live humbly, and I totally agree. So now maybe it's time for you to move out of your house that is a city. On an ego level alone, you will be the biggest hero in the history of ever. And by the way, any involvement in the Holocaust, bygones. I know some of you out there are like, well, why don't those bums get a job like the rest of us? Well, did you know that the average Arby's employee in Ethiopia only gets paid nothing an hour because they don't have one. They don't have one. The bottom line is this. If you sell the Vatican and you take that money and you use it to feed every single human being on the planet, you will get crazy pussy. All the pussy. And I don't mean literally. That might not be your cup of tea. I don't know what your version of all the pussy is. But you'll get all the pussy. Amen.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. That's the music that means that we're about to listen to the tinfoil hats. It's the music that means we hate our own heads, so we wear aluminium foil chapeaus. Was that okay?
Do you mean it's the news and commentary we listen to because we hate our own heads?
I love my head.
Yes, you do.
Okay, sorry.
Oh, this is the comedy part of the program.
Is it? I was laughing at some of the other stuff.
Yeah.
That's Sarah Silverman.
Sarah.
She's a side swimmer. Yeah.
I love my Sarah.
You're going to donate to the church and get all... Oh, never mind. I won't go there.
I never know where you're going to go, Randall. Okay. You have yourself a tinfoil hat that you wish to share with the people.
Do you know that California is under an incredible drought?
I've heard
that. They may only have 1 year of water left.
Right.
Okay, but do you know why they're having a drought?
No. Yes, I do, actually. It's climate change.
Yeah, it is. It's a El Nino. It is the gays and God calling down the judgment. Now, this guy is a White House... William Koenig is a White House correspondent.
He's a what?
William Koenig is a legitimate White House correspondent.
For what?
For Watch.
Excuse me. News...
Watch.org.
Watch.org. I've never heard of them.
Okay.
Are they a small outfit, are they?
Well, if he's a White House correspondent...
So it's a right-wing organization.
Oh, no doubt. So let's have a listen to William Koenig being interviewed on Watch.org.
Watch.org and William Koenig. Here he is.
Bill, sometimes we think of judgment as being weather like Katrina and so forth. Could judgment actually come at the hands of even worse political leaders than we now have in Washington? Is that a judgment as well that we could see in the future?
Yeah, I think we see different forms of judgment. I mean, Pastor John MacArthur in California said the day that Obama was elected, I'm paraphrasing what he said, but he said that was a sign of the fact that we have a president that is favorable toward LGBT and abortion and others was in the beginning of a greater period of judgment. And I think we're living in judgment right now as we see these things that are happening that are very perplexing to us as believers. The other thing is, look at the leadership in Washington. My gosh, American people are fed up with Congress. And, you know, I think their approval rating is 15-20%. Mm-hmm. It's bad. The White House is bad. America deserves more and something better than this. So that's a consequence. And then, you know, we look at economic potential consequences. So it comes in various forms and fashion, Larry, outside of the weather and other so-called things like that. Look at our financial collapses of 2001, 2008, and some people believe, again, at the end of 2015. So we're just living in a very uncharted time, and things are out of order. There's division, and there's a lot of complication in our times. And the big thing is the fact that our country is moved away from our Judeo-Christian values and morals, and that biblically leads to judgment.
Bill's quotes are heavily out of this newsletter, and you say, right now the state of California has only about 1 year of water supply left in its reservoirs, and our strategic backup supply, groundwater, is rapidly disappearing, and you suggest perhaps that this is even more judgment?
Well, that was a NASA report a couple weeks ago that said that they had that 1 year supply in their reservoirs, and they're, you know, already cutting back substantially. The California Governor Brown has required, I think, anywhere from 25-32% reduction in home use of water. So, you know, Jan, we've got a state that over and over again will go against the Word of God, that will continually take positions on marriage, on abortion, and on a lot of things that are just completely opposed to the scriptures. And fortunately, a lot of times when it starts in California, it spreads to the rest of the country and even spreads to the rest of the world. So there very likely could be a drought component to this judgment.
You know, when I hear people like that, all I can say is, tax the church. Yeah. Tax this fucker now. Listen, I am sick of listening to this chicken shit. It's like to deny global warming and to say that the drought in California is due to some sort of wrath of God over gayness.
But these are the kind of guys that bring snowballs into the floor of the Senate and say, there's no such thing as global warming. Look, it's snowing outside. They don't understand that warming and cooling is part of the climate change that's creating extremes. No, extremes.
It's George and Harry next door.
No.
Engaging in anal sex is affecting the weather.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus. I'm sorry.
Oh, mate, you've got a nice idea. I think that, what is it? Now, he's actually some sort of
White House correspondent.
He's a White House correspondent.
For his own
newspaper.
Yeah. Koenig's Eye View from the White House, it's called.
Really? Yeah. Keep it. Anyway. That was a wonderful clip of pure lunacy. How do I top that? Well, Gavin Hillary is a Fox News contributor. I wonder what that trophy looks like.
And a big toilet.
Yeah, something like that, yeah. So Gavin kind of snouted in earning his $2 by saying shit that's totally fucking crazy.
Oh, and offensive. And Hannity of all places.
This guy, if he ever came to my house at dinner, would end up with a spatula up his ass.
Sideways.
Sideways and painfully.
Yeah, because, and not by you or me, but by...
Oh, yes, right, yes.
By she who must be obeyed.
That's right. I happen to be married to a very lovely woman who's a feminist.
And a doctor.
And she would eat
not a
this
medical doctor.
She would destroy this boy. He'd be a dead man. So, ladies and gentlemen, I give you the sexist bullshit that is Gavin Hillary on Fox's Hannity in the last 2 weeks. Here he is, Gavin Hillary.
It's a look at the data, but the big picture here is women do earn less in America because they choose to. They would rather go to their daughter's piano recital than stay all night at work working on a you know, proposal.
What?
So they end up earning less. They're less ambitious. And I think this is sort of God's way. This is nature's way of saying women should be at home with the kids. They're happier there.
I hope that your viewers do not take you, sir, seriously.
There's a great book you should read. It's called Why Men Earn More, and it's all about women choosing to put family over work, and that's why they earn less.
Having a choice does not mean that you're less ambitious, and your comments are absolutely deplorable. Sean, I would like
less
you...
Less ambitious in the world.
I would like you to adjust it. You're a father. You have a daughter.
Heroes. If you were a real feminist, you would support housewives and see them as the heroes,
you
and women who work wasting their time.
You said that women are less ambitious.
Women are
you
less
have
ambitious.
Said, you have also said... that women are better suited in the home.
Yes,
you've also said that, that women are emotional and women shouldn't run for public office. All of these things that just
I never said women shouldn't run for public office.
Yes, you have. You've said that
before. If we're talking about 50% of the population, generally out of this 250 million people or 150 million people, most women are happier at home. They are pretending that they like working and they're not making money because they don't stay all night at the office. They don't go the extra mile. They don't work all weekend. You're making a mistake. You would be much happier at home with a husband and children.
Oh, boy. Oh,
I mean,
boy.
I'm literally shaking.
You just said you're single. Oh. You don't have a boyfriend. You what?
That's
you're celibate.
My choice.
Yeah, look, you're miserable. You would be so much happier with kids around you tonight. Imagine coming home, mommy's home.
Even Hannity, who said the worst shit in the world.
And shit. Jesus Christ. You know, but the thing is that the first thing I thought of when Randy brought this to me is this has got to be a gag. No. This has got to be a gag. Because I'm seriously, because he doesn't just start. He keeps digging the fucking hole.
This is one of those videos. I'll put the young Bill. I'll put this on our website
because you're gonna look. Even the girl, the woman, is sitting there going, "Say what?
I'm shaking." She says, "I'm literally shaking." I'll put this on our
picture this.
thebillshow.net website in our video section.
I swear to God, she's just like, and
it's like, I hope your viewers do not take you seriously.
And Hannity's goes, you could just see him backing away. He's just going, it's like, fuck. Oh, my God. And literally, if he ever came to my house within 3 minutes of him opening his fucking yap, he would have a spatula so fucking far up his ass.
That's terrible. You're just, you don't want to work. You don't want to work. You want to go. You want to come home and say, Mommy's home. Mommy's home.
And that's why I think it might have been a gag.
No, it's not. This guy's fetting.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Really, seriously, man. That was hilarious.
Sorry, Fair Dinkum means the real deal.
Fair Dinkum means the real deal. Listen, that's our tinfoil hats for today. And this is show number 120.
Yeah.
And we're probably we had a lot more that we were going to talk about, but listen, we get to the point where it's one hour 10. We go, slow down, Dicks.
You guys need a commercial break.
You do. Listen, if you want to get in touch with us, you know where to reach us. TheBillShow.net. That's right.
It's actually a real website.
TheBillShow.net is where
I feel so legitimate.
And you are going to be posting a lot of blog articles and memes and all the stuff that we have
videos
on the show.
From the show. Yeah.
Yeah, so that you can actually see Sean Hannity look back surprised.
He's doing a face palm, which I've never seen anybody do on Fox News.
One of the few times you would actually agree with Sean Hannity. I don't believe that he's saying this on my show. Yeah. Also, as I said, BillShow.net, everything Bill Show in one place. You can get us on Stitcher Radio, and Player FM is the new one that we have on. We passed 350,000 feed hits.
Cumulative hits.
Feed hits. And so we're very happy about that. And so the numbers are looking good. And listen, we really do appreciate
it. May only be one or two people listening to it 24/7.
Yeah, I think they're actually in a hospital somewhere in LA.
They aren't. They will be.
Padded room. I listen to the Bill Show every day. Then I shoot the raccoons.
Not raccoons. Sniffing raccoons.
Not raccoons again. Listen, that's 120 all sealed up and put away.
Ladies and gentlemen.
That's wave to the people, Randall.
Bye-bye.
Bye. See you later. Bye. Wave, Randy.
Bye.
Now it's time to feed them, give them their meds, and pack them away till next time. So long and good night from the Bill Show.